Ready for another deep dive? Today, we're taking a closer look at the intimate way of Zen. We'll be going beyond the typical exploration of Zen Buddhism.
Oh, absolutely.
Think personal stories, ancient wisdom, and even reflections on a popular board game.
Really?
All these threads, they kind of weave together to hopefully illuminate this path to awakening.
What I find so captivating about this book is how the author, seamlessly blends those personal anecdotes with the ancient teachings. It makes Zen Buddhism feel surprisingly relevant to our modern lives.
It really does. Like, he kicks things off with his own crisis of faith as a teenager.
Oh, wow.
Imagine, just 13 or 14 years old.
Yeah.
Wrestling with all these doubts about God, the nature of reality. He was questioning his family's, you know, deeply held Baptist beliefs, kind of caught between their devout practices and his father's skepticism.
I can see that.
And, you know, it makes you think about how, especially in our information-saturated world,
right,
something we all grapple with, don't you think?
We do, yeah.
He goes on to explore all these different spiritual traditions.
Okay.
From, like, the wisdom of Alan Watts to the teachings of Neojin Senzaki,
yeah.
Paul Reps, Shunryu Suzuki, you know.
Right.
And he eventually finds himself drawn to Zen Buddhism under the guidance of Melsojin Weitzman.
Mm.
And throughout it all, he keeps emphasizing the importance of presence.
Presence.
This search for a spiritual home, you know, like a touchstone. It feels so relatable.
I agree.
It's like we all crave that raft in a raging sea of uncertainty.
That's a great way to put it.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. Having a tradition, you know, it can offer stability.
Right.
Direction amidst all that chaos of doubt.
Yeah.
But it's also important to remember, I think, clinging too tightly to dogma.
Right.
That can be, well, it can be pretty limiting. It's like the raft, as helpful as it is, it can become waterlogged.
Oh, I like that.
Hindering the journey instead of helping us navigate.
That's such a great point. It's about finding that balance, isn't it?
It is.
Respecting tradition, but staying open to those new perspectives.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, alongside all this exploration of doubt, the author also emphasizes the importance of hope.
Hope, okay.
He calls it a hunch. This innate human sense that there's a right out there,
mm-hmm.
even when we struggle to define it.
I like that.
It's like a subtle whisper urging us forward.
Yeah, a hunch.
In Mahayana Buddhism, they call this bodhicitta.
Right.
The mind of awakening. Have you ever felt that pull towards something more?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Even when you're unsure of what it is.
It's that spark of possibility, yeah. That intuition that something more exists, something worth seeking amidst, you know, all the noise and uncertainty.
Yes.
It's like the fuel for our journey.
Yes.
Toward awakening.
And to navigate that journey, the author, he really dives into the core of Zen practice.
Okay.
Meditation, mindfulness, yeah. Self-reflection. He kind of boils it down to these three simple yet really profound instructions.
Let's hear them.
Sit down. Shut up. Pay attention.
I like it.
It sounds so straightforward, right?
It does, yeah.
But the depth of those words.
The simplicity. It can be deceiving.
It can be, yeah.
Those instructions, though, they invite a really profound shift in our awareness.
They do.
They call for us to quiet the constant chatter.
Oh, yes.
Of our minds. Connect with a deeper reality within ourselves. Right here.
Yeah.
In the present moment.
And to support this practice,
mm-hmm.
he highlights the significance of vows.
No vows, okay.
Specifically, the Soto Zen precepts.
Right.
Not in the sense of rigid rules, but as guiding principles.
Yeah.
For our actions and intentions as we navigate, you know, daily life.
Think of these vows as a container, then.
Okay.
For ethical conduct.
Yes.
A gentle reminder of our commitment to this path.
Right.
They provide a framework, I think,
yep.
for moving through the complexities of modern life. With wisdom and compassion.
With wisdom and compassion. And, you know, as anyone who's ever played Snakes and Ladders knows, the path, it isn't always linear.
Never is.
You know how it is. You're feeling confident. You're rolling high, about to reach the top.
Yes.
And then, bam!
Okay.
Snake sends you sliding back down.
Every time.
The author uses this analogy to highlight how progress
right.
isn't always smooth.
Mm-hmm.
And setbacks, well, they're just part of the journey.
They are, for sure.
Right.
And the game itself.
Yeah.
Rooted in those ancient Indian traditions.
Wow. I didn't know that.
It beautifully reflects that. The unexpected twists and turns, the ups and downs, the moments of, you know, apparent progress.
Right, right.
Followed by those sudden setbacks. They're all part of the spiritual path.
They are, yeah.
We all encounter those those snakes.
Yeah, yes, we do.
The challenges that test our resolve, yeah. For sure.
Speaking of challenges,
mm-hmm.
The author, he also talks about the importance of surrounding ourselves with, you know, with the right people. He shares this this kind of funny anecdote about a Facebook friend request.
Okay.
And it really highlights that difference between casual connections and true friends.
Right.
He even quotes a friend's definition of a true friend.
What's that?
Someone who will, and this is kind of morbid, but someone who will help you move a body.
Oh, wow.
It's morbidly hilarious, but.
It is.
It makes you think about the company we keep.
Right.
Especially on this path, right?
Yeah. It's so important.
It is.
We need to be, I think, discerning about who we allow into that inner circle, you know?
Right.
Especially as we're navigating this spiritual growth. True friends, I think, they're the ones who challenge us.
They do, yeah.
Support our aspirations, you know?
Right.
And they help us through those, you know, inevitable challenges that we face along the way.
For sure.
They're the ones who will help us move those metaphorical bodies, right?
Mm.
When life gets tough.
Mm-hmm. When life gets tough. And sometimes those challenges, they involve our relationships with spiritual teachers.
Yeah, that's true.
The author, he doesn't shy away from discussing, you know, the complexities, potential pitfalls of that.
No, he doesn't.
He even acknowledges the potential for abuse.
That happens, yeah.
And exploitation in those relationships.
For sure.
And it's a sobering reminder that trust, it needs to be earned.
It does.
Even in spiritual settings, right?
It's crucial, I think, to find teachers who embody humility.
Yes.
Ethical conduct.
Right.
Accountability.
The accountability.
Teachers who are transparent about their own struggles.
Yes.
And prioritize the well-being of their students.
Right.
Above personal gain.
It's so important. He emphasizes, you know, trusting our intuition.
Yeah.
Being discerning. Even questioning authority when it's necessary.
Absolutely.
It's about finding that balance.
Yeah.
Between, you know, seeking guidance.
Right.
And maintaining our own inner compass.
Blind faith, it can be dangerous.
It can be, yeah.
It's crucial to find teachers who encourage critical thinking.
Yes.
Who empower us to connect with our own inner wisdom.
Yes, our own inner wisdom. Now, on a lighter note.
Okay.
He also talks about how awakening can manifest in the most unexpected, like, everyday moments.
Really?
He describes this powerful encounter with Proust's Remembrance of Things Past. You've ever heard that?
I have, yeah.
Just the simple act of tasting a Madeleine
triggered
this profound sensory experience, this glimpse into a deeper reality, you know, beyond our usual understanding.
Wow.
Have you ever had an experience like that?
I
Something seemingly insignificant that opened up a whole new way of seeing things.
I have. I think so many times it's like those moments, they remind us that awakening, it isn't always about some big, you know, mystical event.
Right.
It's often in the ordinary. Yeah, in those everyday details, if we're just present enough to notice them.
If we're present enough, yeah.
Exactly.
But speaking of challenges, you know, embracing a new spiritual path, it can sometimes create some friction in our relationships.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially with family.
Yeah.
The author talks about, you know, the potential for hurt feelings.
Right.
And strained connections when our beliefs kind of challenge those of our loved ones.
Of course.
He even shares some of his own experiences.
Yeah.
You know, joining a Zen center.
Right.
And the mixed reactions he got from his family.
It's a delicate dance, isn't it?
It is.
Balancing our own, you know, spiritual exploration.
Yeah.
With honoring family bonds.
Right.
And respecting, you know, the beliefs of those that we love.
Absolutely.
It takes compassion.
It does.
Understanding, a willingness to just engage in open and honest communication.
Open and honest communication. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's not about, you know, imposing our beliefs on others.
Right.
But finding those ways to integrate our spiritual insights into our relationships.
Yes.
With sensitivity and respect.
I like that. Sensitivity and respect.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And speaking of navigating challenges, the author, he dives into these Buddhist concepts of mental hindrances.
Okay.
Desire, aversion, sloth.
Right.
And torpor, restlessness, doubt.
Familiar stuff.
Yeah, he draws these parallels to the seven deadly sins.
Okay.
And kind of suggests this idea of reframing these so-called obstacles as opportunities for growth.
Opportunities, yeah.
It's a fascinating way of looking at those, you know, quote-unquote negative tendencies we all have.
We all have them. What do you say?
Absolutely. It's incredibly insightful, I think.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, judging or suppressing those ordinary human impulses, right?
Right.
We can see them as these doorways to a deeper understanding.
Okay.
The path. It isn't about, you know, achieving some idealized state of perfection.
Right.
But learning to work with the full spectrum of our human experience.
The full spectrum, yeah.
The full catastrophe, as Zorba the Greek would say, makes you realize that the messiness, the imperfections, they're all part of the journey.
They're all part of it.
They are, yeah.
Yeah.
But I have to admit, reading about the challenge of maintaining a consistent practice, like, that really resonated with me.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when he talks about those periods of dryness.
Right.
Or stagnation.
Yeah.
That feeling of just being stuck.
Yeah.
He even brings up this term, acedia.
Acedia, right.
Which is like, you know, a spiritual apathy.
Okay.
Or depression.
Right.
He calls it the noonday demon.
Oh, wow.
Tempting us to just abandon our practice altogether.
Ooh. Yeah, I know that one.
Ugh. Have you ever felt that pull?
Absolutely. It's so common, I think, on the spiritual path.
Yeah.
That feeling of just being uninspired, disconnected, or just, you know, just plain stuck.
Yeah.
But those periods of dryness, they can be incredibly valuable, I think.
Oh, how so?
Well, they test our commitment, you know. They invite us to reconnect with our motivations. Right.
Oh, right.
And they can ultimately deepen our practice in ways we might not have expected.
In ways we might not have expected.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a good reminder that it's not always going to feel blissful or easy.
It's not a cakewalk, that's for sure.
No.
No.
Sometimes it's about simply showing up.
Showing up, yeah.
Even when we don't, you know, we don't feel like it.
Right.
Trusting that the practice itself will carry us through.
The practice will be there one foot in front of the other.
Kind of like a long distance run, right?
There you go.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Exactly.
There'll be moments of exhilaration.
Right.
As well as those moments of exhaustion.
For sure, for sure. And it's in those moments of exhaustion, I think.
Yeah.
That our resilience is built, you know?
Okay.
It's about cultivating that inner strength to just keep going.
Right.
Even when it's challenging.
Even when it's challenging. Now, the author also talks about the importance of integration.
Integration.
Yeah. Right. Bridging that gap between contemplative practice and ethical action.
Bringing it all together.
Bringing it all together. Yeah. It's about bringing those spiritual insights.
Yeah.
You know, off the meditation cushion and into the real world.
And into the real world. Exactly.
Right.
It's about living our practice.
Yes.
Letting it inform how we interact with others. You know,
right?
How we approach our work, how we engage with the world around us.
Yes, exactly.
He talks about it as this integration of practice and encounter.
Right.
And he even shares a story about a Zen teacher.
Okay.
Who had this really profound insight during a retreat, only to have it completely shattered by a simple encounter with a young girl questioning his mala beads.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's a humbling reminder that awakening is an ongoing process.
It is.
It's not like a destination we arrive at and then we're done.
Right.
You know,
it's a journey, not a destination.
It is. It is.
Even after, I think, you know, even after really profound insights, we're still susceptible to ego, self-doubt, all the complexities of being human.
All the complexities. Exactly.
Yeah.
And speaking of human tendencies,
mm-hmm.
he doesn't shy away from our constant desire for novelty.
Oh, I know that one.
That restlessness
that
can lead us astray.
Yeah.
Even when we're deeply engaged in a practice.
Right.
Remember that story he tells about the Zen abbot?
Which one?
Who became disillusioned with his practice.
Oh, yeah.
And decided to try ayahuasca.
Ayahuasca, yeah.
It makes you wonder, have you ever felt that pull towards something new?
All the time.
Even when you're already, you know, deeply engaged in your own past.
Oh, absolutely. It's so tempting, isn't it?
It is.
That allure of the new, the different, you know.
Right.
Even when we're on a path that resonates really deeply.
Yeah.
It's a good reminder, I think, to check in with our intentions, you know, to make sure we're not just chasing experiences.
Right.
But deepening our understanding.
Deepening our understanding.
Yeah.
It's so easy to get caught up in that chase, you know?
Oh, it is. It is.
But speaking of staying the course,
okay,
he also reminds us that true peace, it comes from embracing impermanence.
Impermanence, right.
The understanding that everything changes.
Everything changes.
It made me think of that, the beautiful image he uses.
Which one?
Changsha's walk in the mountains.
Oh, yeah, Changsha.
He finds joy in both the vibrant spring flowers and the delicate autumn dew.
Right.
Appreciating each season, each stage of the cycle.
It's beautiful, yeah. That's such a powerful image of acceptance, isn't it?
It is.
Embracing that cyclical nature of life.
Right.
Accepting the ebb and flow.
The ebb and flow.
The periods of growth and decay, joy and sorrow. It's in letting go of our attachment to specific outcomes that we can find, I think, true peace.
Yeah.
And freedom.
And freedom. It's a continuous dance, isn't it?
It is.
Letting go and embracing.
Letting go, embracing, yeah.
And speaking of letting go, he challenges our usual way of thinking about ourselves with this Buddhist concept of Anatman.
Anatman, right.
Or no self.
No self, yeah.
He ties it back to Western philosophy.
Tussie.
Mentioning David Hume's idea that we can't really grasp this solid sense of self.
Right.
Only a stream of perceptions.
Just a stream.
It's a pretty radical concept if you really think about it.
It is radical. But think that this self that we cling to so tightly is actually an illusion.
Yeah.
A construct of our mind.
That's all in our heads.
Right. But the author suggests that letting go of that illusion, it can open us up to a deeper sense of interconnectedness.
Interconnectedness.
This beautiful reality that we're all part of something much greater than ourselves.
Much greater. He has a knack for weaving these complex ideas into relatable examples too.
Yeah.
Like when he connects no self to Emily Dickinson's poetry.
Emily Dickinson,
the way she describes like the vastness of the brain.
Right.
It makes you realize how fluid and interconnected our experience really is.
Our experience, yeah.
It's incredible.
It's brilliant how he uses those literary and cultural touchstones, you know, to illuminate these concepts, making them accessible.
Right.
And I think thought-provoking for everyone, regardless of their background.
I agree.
Yeah.
He's honest about the fact that this journey, it isn't always easy.
It's not. No, it's not always sunshine and roses, is it?
It's not.
No.
He talks about the dark night of the soul.
The dark night of the soul.
Periods of intense spiritual doubt and despair.
Yeah.
He even uses that intense story of Yoik. Bodhidharma's disciple.
Right.
Who cuts off his own arm to prove his commitment.
It's a little extreme, don't you think?
It's a little extreme, but
yeah,
it's a powerful, albeit somewhat shocking, illustration of the depths of despair and yearning.
Yeah.
That can accompany this journey.
It can come with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it also highlights the transformative potential of those dark nights.
Of those dark nights.
You know, facing our deepest fears and doubts.
Yeah.
It can lead to these really profound breakthroughs in understanding.
Breakthroughs, yeah, for sure. I think it's about recognizing that those difficult emotions, they're not something to fear or avoid.
It's working through them.
Working through them.
Yeah, allowing ourselves to feel them fully. That leads to, I think, true healing and wholeness.
And wholeness, yeah. And he's quite candid about his own struggles.
Yes,
with, you know, anxiety, grief, feeling lost.
It makes it clear that this path, it isn't about, you know, transcending our humanity.
Right.
But meeting it.
Meeting it.
Compassion.
And honesty.
Compassion and honesty.
Yeah.
It's about recognizing that those challenges,
Christ,
those moments of darkness, they're all part of the human experience.
Yeah, they are.
And therefore part of the spiritual path itself.
Part of the path itself. Huh. He even talks about how spiritual experiences themselves can be misleading.
Oh, really?
He uses this term, makyo.
Makyo, okay.
In Japanese for devil's tricks.
Devil's tricks, I like it.
To describe those experiences that, you know, they can feel like awakening.
Right.
But they might actually lead us further from the truth.
Oh, wow.
He even shares about a vision that he had of Jesus.
Really?
A powerful experience that he later recognized as a form of makyo.
Wow. It just reminds us that not all spiritual experiences are created equal. You know?
Right. Right.
It's about approaching those experiences with a healthy dose of humility. Humility,
And discernment.
Discernment, for sure.
It's testing them against the wisdom, I think. We've gleaned from our teachers, from our traditions.
Our traditions,
Like, you know, it's easy to get swept away by something that feels It feels really profound.
It is.
But grounding our practice
right.
in ethical conduct, I think, is key.
Grounding our practice in ethical conduct. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
He really emphasizes those Buddhist ideals of loving kindness.
Loving kindness, yeah.
Compassion,
of course.
Sympathetic joy, equanimity.
Right.
Calling them, you know, antidotes to self-centeredness.
Antidotes to self-centeredness, yeah.
He even talks about how our practice relates to the suffering we see in the world.
In the world, great.
Sharing his own internal debate mm-hmm. about balancing, you know, inner work with social action.
That's a good one. That's a really relevant conversation, isn't it?
It is.
It's easy to get caught in that tension.
It is.
Between focusing on, you know, our own spiritual growth.
Right. And responding to the needs of the world around us.
Right, the needs of the world.
The author, he highlights the importance of finding that delicate balance, I think.
Delicate balance, yeah.
Letting wisdom and compassion guide our actions.
Guide our actions, yeah. And he tells this really poignant anecdote about hearing a news report on homelessness.
Oh, wow.
The voices of children who went to bed hungry.
It's heartbreaking.
It is. And it's a stark reminder that our practice, it isn't confined to our meditation cushions.
It's not, no.
You know, it's about how we move through the world, right. How we respond to injustice.
It's about recognizing our interconnectedness, you know.
Yes, it is.
Realizing that our actions have far-reaching consequences.
They do.
He points to those 10 attributes of a bodhisattva.
Okay.
As guideposts for ethical engagement.
For ethical engagement. Okay, yeah. What are those again?
So we're talking generosity.
Right.
Ethical conduct.
Oh.
Patience.
Right.
Joyful effort.
Right.
Meditation.
Meditation, yeah.
Wisdom. Skillful means,
okay.
Aspirations, strength, and knowledge.
Wow, that's quite a list.
It's a lot, right?
It is. It's a practice in and of itself.
It is. It's a lifelong practice.
It is. Yeah. It's about bringing all those qualities that we cultivate on the path into the world around us.
Bringing it all together, bringing it all together.
It's all together.
Full circle.
Now, bringing it back to that idea of no self.
Okay.
He also talks about the challenges and paradoxes of integrating spiritual awakening into, you know,
right.
into everyday life.
Everyday life.
He uses that image from the ox herding pictures,
yeah.
The final stage where the ox disappears and the man returns to the marketplace.
Back to the marketplace.
What did you make of that?
It's a potent image, isn't it?
It is.
It speaks to this paradox.
Okay.
That realizing our true nature,
right.
this inherent emptiness.
And interconnectedness. It doesn't negate our humanity.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
It allows us to engage with the world with all its messiness and beauty from a place of, I think, of deeper wisdom.
Deeper wisdom, yeah.
And compassion.
Compassion.
He even calls this stage becoming the fat guy.
Becoming the fat guy.
Yeah.
I love that.
Which I always, you know, it makes me chuckle.
It makes me chuckle too.
It's such a playful way to describe that sense of ease.
Yes.
And fullness that arises, I think, when we integrate our practice
yes.
into our lives. You know, it's not about
right.
becoming some idealized version of ourselves,
right.
but embracing
who we are,
the fullness of who we are, yeah, imperfections and all, you know,
moving through the world with a sense of humor and
yeah.
generosity.
That's the beauty of this intimate way, isn't it?
It's
about recognizing that awakening.
Yeah,
it can happen anywhere at any time.
At any time.
It's not about, you know, seeking some extraordinary experience,
right?
But paying attention to the unfolding of this very moment. This very moment.
And he leaves us with this really thought-provoking question.
Okay.
This invitation to reflect on our own lives.
On our own lives, yeah.
Yes. So thinking about your own life, where do you see the ox appearing? Where are you being called to let go of your preconceived notions and embrace the unknown?
Wow, that is a powerful question.
It is.
To conclude our deep dive.
It really is. It challenges us to look at our own experiences, our own
struggles. Our own struggles, yeah.
Triumphs through the lens of these teachings.
Through that lens, exactly.
It's a call to keep exploring.
Yeah.
To remain curious, to approach this path with an open heart.
Open heart, yeah.
And a willingness to learn.
Absolutely.
And, you know, as the author says, quoting Srinivasagadatta Maharaj, he says, "Wisdom is knowing I am nothing. Love is knowing I am everything. And between the two, my life moves."
That's beautiful. What a beautiful sentiment to end on.
It is.
It reminds us that this journey is about embracing the paradox.
And paradox, yeah.
Finding that balance between knowing our own insignificance,
right,
in the grand scheme of things,
right,
and recognizing our interconnectedness with all beings.
Yeah.
It's in that space between emptiness and fullness.
Yes.
That we truly come alive.
That we truly come alive. So much to ponder.
So much.
So much to ponder. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the intimate way of Zen.
My pleasure.
We hope you found it insightful.
I have.
And maybe even a little transformative.
A little bit, yeah.
Until next time, may you embrace the doubt.
Embrace the doubt.
Nurture the hope.
Nurture it.
Cultivate your practice.
Cultivate.
And walk this path with courage, curiosity, and an open heart.
Beautifully said.
Thank you.